You may end up in limbo, as your Earth people say. You may find your present time does not exist anymore when you get back to it, or it is no longer where it should have been. You would become lost in time, as I believe some of our early travelers were, Yavity cautioned. From this I deducted that they had indeed tried to go back in time to change things. What is time anyway? I asked. Do you have the same unit of time as used on Earth? We measure it in a similar way. There is a small unit of time that we use because it is a natural rhythm that can be found throughout this universe. Crystals can be made to vibrate at a rhythm, which makes it easy to measure time in this small unit. This measure of time was given to your people by friends of ours tens of thousands of your years ago. Your people used it back then, so it is not strange to you, but it was lost for some reason. You have recently rediscovered this unit of measure and, much to our amusement, you now call it your own. It is known by you as Waitmskanda TM of Time, he explained. A friend of mine, Xena 5, who is one of your people, told me that you had to change your density level before you could time, travel over great distances. That seems like a lot of trouble to go to just for time travel, I suggested. To understand the subjects of time travel and matter transfer through space, you must first understand that nothing in this universe is solid. Perhaps the best way for you to understand what I am saying is to imagine the universe as being constructed only of wave forms, microscopic vibrations or small waves of energy that are too small to be seen. Matter attracts matter, or, in reality, these small waves are a form of electromagnetic energy that appears to travel in thread, like lines of ribbons of force. As matter is formed, some parts of it become more compressed than others, so you have the different elements, as you may know them, in the universe. However, if you stop and pull all these elements apart, you will find they are nothing but small energy waves once again and have no real, solid form. Our studies have shown that these waves at their inception are nothing more than a very intelligent and powerful thought. That is why your thoughts are important. They become one with the universe and make what it is. So you see, it is true when they say that all things start with a thought. When you travel through time or space, you are no more than traveling through a thought. Yavity continued. But with a slightly different theme. Time travel also made space travel instantaneous for us, and we now no longer use the old methods of gravity manipulation. It is not a good thing to play with antimatter in this way. It would be a good idea if your own people stopped playing around with it, also. We have lost many craft and personnel in the past by using it, and if you heard some of our ancient legends while you were on Haven, you might have guessed there is every possibility our parent planet Kyber was destroyed by some overzealous experiments with this substance. That is one of the main reasons we have tried so hard to achieve space travel outside of gravitational manipulation. If you think about it for a moment, if you started a long trip through space and then projected yourself forward in time to the point where the trip would end, no matter how long it should have taken, you could arrive there almost instantaneously if you wished it so. On the return journey, you could set yourself to arrive back at your home base at whatever time you wished it to be. For instance, if this expedition that we are on now to planet Earth took 30 of our days to complete in real time, excluding the time travel aspect, we would prefer to arrive back after those 30 days have gone by on Haven. That keeps us in synchronization with our life cycle at home. That is, we do not age at a different rate to those who remain behind in Haven. The catch, he added, is to make sure you do not arrive back before you personally have left. There are two reasons for this. There will be two of you in almost the same place at the same time, and much confusion. We have since found that one of those two people or items, if it is items that have been sent through time, will be catapulted into the past and will occupy that vortex or space that was created back there by these overlaps in future displaced time. Please do not ask me to elaborate on that. This journey is not long enough. Why was it necessary to become dimensionally variant to time travel? I asked. If you remain in a lower order of vibration, such as you would normally be in, he was referring to me personally, You would only find it possible to time travel within your own lifetime, your third dimensional lifetime, that is, which will be the only one you can perceive at this time, as I understand it. It would be an unreal world for you, perhaps similar to the way you perceive a dream, which is one that you can access the future even now, he explained. Do you mean, then, that we could time travel right now on Earth if we had the technology? I inquired once more. Yes, why not? But what do you mean if you have the technology? For you surely do, Yavity suggested. No one on Earth can time travel. We fantasize about it a lot, but no one that I know of has done it yet, I replied, slightly puzzled. Well, then, how is it you say? Someone is pulling the wool over your eyes, was his answer. Do you communicate with other alien races? I asked, trying to find some other subject that he felt comfortable in discussing with me. Yes, when we feel it may be appropriate, which is not often, was his reply. Like who, then? I asked. Well, you have some close neighbors. I believe they are interacting with you more frequently than we are, he commented. What do they look like and where do they come from? I asked eagerly. Well, from your mind at TMSI you already know what they look like. Zetas or Greys, the aliens I had read about in the magazines, they come from, well, shall we say, not too far away, at least the ones that are presently interacting with your people. How close? The moon? I pushed on. Something like that, but no, not that moon, he backed off the subject, almost startled. Well, then, why do they come to Earth? I asked. Much the same as us. They perhaps need your understanding as well as help. They have been around a long time. They are mostly a very gentle race, but they do not really understand you at all. You have changed since they were last there in numbers. In spite of that, there is every chance they may be among you openly, sooner than we will be. Was Yavatia TMS most unexpected reply. May I ask if there are other reasons for your most frequent visits to Earth, other than for breeding purposes? Yes, you may. We are at the present time preparing for a major repair and correction that is to take place in your 1993. It will change a few things, all for the better, you should know. It is of our doing, long ago, that some of these repairs are necessary. It is a payback, if you like. It is for our own good, too. Should we be lucky enough ever to share your planet with you, he replied. A little voice inside me kept wondering why I had not asked these questions of Xena. I was only just beginning to realize how strong her influence had been over me, now that I was free of it. Somehow I was starting to get the feeling that I was only able to ask the questions she was prepared to answer. There were some strange emotions at work here. To say I was confused would not tell half the story. What are the others, aliens, doing, then, apart from genetics? I asked. Some are also assisting with the repairs, some are doing things with your governments. There is much distrust, mostly from your side, he said. How do you feel about all this? I asked. We try to stay distant. We do not like some of what is going on, but we must not judge. What if I were to tell my people back home of all this? I suggested. You may tell whom you like. Those who believe, already know. Those who will not, will not. There was no arguing with that logic. What is important to us, Yavati continued, is that you know we are here and who we are. When we call on you to help us, you will know who we are and what we are trying to do. That may just make the difference in the end. I thought that now would be a good time to ask about a tour of the control room. Would it be too much to ask if I could see how you steer this thing? The transporter, I mean. Control center, he thought about it. I will get back to you on that, he added. I rested, rehydrated, and then searched for more people to cross, examine, not very successfully, I might add. I had some long talks with Millie, who had been told this would be her last opportunity to see Earth for quite a number of years, so she was going to make the most of it. We got along very well for two people who were more than a generation apart. Time passed and eventually I was informed that preparations were underway for my transmutation back to a lower density. I would undergo a similar course of events as had happened on my way in 9 days before, but of course, in reverse order. It was a process that would speed up or slow down my metabolism, etmm not sure which. Just before this took place, I had to consume quite an amount of a very salty liquid, not the best experience of the trip. The total time for this transmutation process was approximately 24 hours. The sequence of events was explained to me beforehand, as it would not be possible to communicate with me once the suit had been removed. What this meant, in fact, was that for just over 24 hours I was to become a golden ghost again. From this point on, things are a little sketchy. I did arrive in Auckland eventually, as you already know from the sequence of events at the beginning of my narration. However, little did I know that my adventure was not yet over, in fact, it was just beginning to warm up. What I had been through was the prelude to, and the reason for, an equally bizarre series of events which were to occur right here on home ground. Part 2. Chapter 18. All Hell Breaks Loose. The experience I have described is now historical fact, certainly as far as EATMM concerned. Denying it will not make it go away. However, some people were about to come into my life who wished this historical fact would pack its bags and hide exclusively in their computer files, possibly forever. For almost 12 months after the initial run, in with the alleged scientists, I lived quite carefully and kept very much to myself. Those previous run-ins with agents, possibly in the keeping of the Dark Overlords, were fast becoming a fading if still somewhat unpleasant memory. I had to make a living, as life in a cave for the rest of my life did not really appeal. But if I had known what was awaiting me in the not too distant future, perhaps cave life would have seemed a little more attractive, for coming out in the open was perhaps the biggest mistake I was yet to make. I should have realized that something was up the day my landlord, John, reported that the police, or persons representing themselves as police, had called around to question me about a car I had once owned, not the one involved in the UFO encounter. I guess, with hindsight, they were checking to see if the address they had for me was the correct one. I would like to think that the police of my country do not do the legwork for the CIS or, even worse, the CIA. Helpfully, these alleged policemen were not the real thing. I had noticed more than once during the course of the next few days the same car parked at the end of my street, usually with two occupants but sometimes with only one. I moved again, but it was not because I was running. It was personal choice this time. I had decided enough was enough. Whatever came out of the next confrontation with these people, I would just have to wear it, and that was that. I had found someone I wanted to settle down with, and that relationship had given me just enough courage to face my pursuers head on. Why they were just watching me at that time I did not know, but when they finally made contact they left me in no doubt that they knew quite a lot about the particular group of off planet visitors that had interacted with me. Evidently they had run across them in some earlier, ill-conceived and quickly aborted time travel experiment, or was that mind travel experiment? They now decided to try to appeal to my sense of patriotism, at least as far as planet Earth and the human race were concerned. They suggested that what I might know about these off-planet visitors was important to the defense of planet Earth and all the people living upon it. Had they sounded the least bit genuine, I might even have conceded to tell them a few things, but their approach was all wrong. In other words, I could read their motives like a book. A friend once told me, "Etatms a wise man who can recognize his enemies, and thetms a great abyss between being smart and being wise." I may never be very smart, but I am truly extremely hard to be wise. I believe a great deal more than we can yet imagine depends on our developing some form of wisdom before we leave this earthly plane of existence. Someone else, and it may even have been my father, suggested to me a long time ago that prisons are only full of criminals who have been caught, and that the really clever ones are still out there working right alongside us. My ancestry on my father at EMS side can be traced back to Germany, and I carry the surname of Neuwald, which I believe is a misspelling of an old German name, Newell. If what my mother said is true, I was born a blue, eyed blonde. I have seen a lock of my hair from my first haircut, which would suggest that perhaps my hair did change from its original color in those early years. Yet I've heard many a tale as to why our eyes and hair change color. In my mind, the most convincing reason is that it is due to fright after we realize exactly where we are and what we have gotten ourselves into on this earth plane. This may suggest that the sooner our hair changes color, the wiser we become. I happen to be a second generation Kiwi, New Zealander, and the ancestry on the German side of my family was barely mentioned while I was growing up and still living at home. Taking all that into account, when a stranger came to the door at my new home address and suggested, among other things, that my loyalties should lie with my ancestral lineage, you could surely excuse me for being a little bewildered. Whatever research they had done on me, they had got that section completely wrong. They maintained that a debriefing was necessary so that what had happened could be understood and evaluated by all. Just who this 8mm was, they did not say. I can remember telling them, "EATMM quite happy with things the way they are. The stubborn streak within me may not be my best asset or most endearing feature, but it is the sole reason EATMM able to tell this story now." They said they could make life very uncomfortable for me if I was uncooperative, however, they didn't TMT appear to be anything they could do to me at that stage, so I said, thanks very much for the friendly advice, and shut the door in their faces. That was another grave mistake on my part. They were obviously more than just curious, and you could say they seemed to be taking this whole thing very seriously. At that time I thought it was all over and I had won my freedom from interference and harassment. Yes, I was still a little naive back then. When you are 8 and set up at EM, as I was, and your only defense is your story, you do not have an instant compulsion to tell everyone about it in an attempt to save yourself. Believe me, not unless you like white coats, doctors and straight jackets. In the years immediately prior to the events I have related, I had been a motor vehicle dealer, at least until 1987 when the stock market crashed no longer made that a viable trade in New Zealand. Even though I was no longer a licensed motor vehicle dealer per se, I would still buy and sell the odd car privately. At about this time, a gentleman introduced himself to me while I was attending a well-known car auction in Auckland City. This gentleman said he had recognized me as the one-time partner of a mutual friend and that we had met some time ago when my partner and I still used to run the same car yard. He said his name was Jeff Wright and that he had access to cheap Japanese second-hand imported cars, which were wholesale stock that was not required or was surplus to dealer needs. There was no reason for me to doubt what he said. I didn't TMT ask too many questions before I began to buy the odd car from him. This eventually proved to be another big mistake on my part. 8 or 9 months must have passed. Jeff would ring me whenever he had a car that he thought I might be interested in buying. Sometimes I would buy them, other times, if I did not have the money, I would turn them down. These guys, so scientists, were very clever. And perhaps Jeff didn't TMT really know the full story, for, in spite of my newfound ability to sniff out deception, I could not see through what Jeff was up to. The cars he had been supplying me with were, without exception 8mm, stolen, or so it appeared to the courts. There needed to be more than one if they were going to get this little game of theirs up and running properly. In the end, there were 6 cars involved in this set up. Unfortunately, the police got so enthusiastic about it all that they even tried to prosecute me for cars that were not stolen. As EATMF suggested, the police were eventually tipped off, and there was no talking my way out of it. The agencies had done a fairly good job. They cunningly let me stew on things for quite some time before they visited me again. It was just as you would expect, cooperate, and we will fix things up for you with the police. I was determined to ride their bluff to the end. Yet I'm not sure how long a straightforward case such as mine should take before it is acted upon in a court of law. 6 to 8 months would seem like a good guess to me, perhaps even less. But not my case. It was like a slow death in the end, 2 years of recurring court appearances, over 20 in total. My accuser Satyam's exceedingly thin excuse was that they were not ready to proceed. From day one of my arrest they appeared to panic and they applied overkill, at least I think they did. These people were meticulous and seemed to be able to reach into every corner of my life. There was no doubting they had done this type of thing before, but to whom and for what reasons? How many before me had been subjected to the same fate? I was rapidly losing faith in every part of our so-called ATM justice ATM system. I knew it was just a game for them, but this was my life they were playing with. Losing my car meant I did not have transport to get to the police station every day, and of course I had no money to hire a lawyer. Alec had been made bankrupt, as all his assets had been taken away. My brother, in law, lent me a few $100s so that I could buy a cheap car to get around in. I refused to go on welfare. I was not going to sink that low. With each voluntary court appearance I would end up locked up out the back of the courthouse until my bail was reprocessed. Sometimes this would take many hours. It was a humiliating and degrading experience. Maybe it was a game for them, but I think you'll agree it was not a very nice one. In the end, I believe it was more for spite than actually to achieve anything. By now they must have known I would never talk to them about my interaction with the aliens. After some 18 or so court appearances, it got to the point where a district court judge said to the police, "If you do not bring forward your charges at the next hearing, I will throw this case out." I really thought that this is what would happen, and it had all been a bluff. But no, they had other things in mind for me. My lawyer, appointed by the court because I had no money, was about as useful as a bucket full of holes, bless his cotton socks. I don't yet think he could believe his luck. If he got paid every time we went to court, he should have made a fortune out of the case. Needless to say, we lost. Some of my friends tried to help me, but I think the result had been written on the judge ATM's report papers before I had even arrived in the courtroom. The trial, Alec had decided to make it a jury trial case, took place in the main Auckland District Courthouse and actually lasted for a full week. That fact alone should have attracted some media attention, you would think. Not that I wanted any of it at the time. The fact that no reference to the trial never found its way into the local papers, as far as the ATM aware, seems just a little strange to me. Apart from my own account, no other explanation was ever brought forward to describe how these stolen cars arrived at my doorstep. I was not charged with stealing them, just receiving them. All these cars I had sold openly, in my own name if I had owned them, or, alternatively, openly from my home address if they had been in some other persona TMS name. There was never any attempt on my part to be subversive, but this did not seem to count for much with anyone. Other illegal, fraudulent paper work was proved to have been done by others and not by me, and descriptions of these other people were presented at the trial. 4 of my friends were prepared to stand up in court and defend me over some very conflicting and none too convincing police evidence, but it seemed to make very little difference, much to their own dismay. Sadly, they did not know the full story, and this book is going to be as much a surprise to them as it is to anyone else. I had to serve half of my 12-month sentence following the trial. What it meant, in fact, was plenty of time to appraise my situation with regard to writing this story in all its detail. It was no longer a private affair, the world had a right to know. It was now July 1993. At about the same time all this was going down, on the other side of the world something was happening that must have had the very people and agencies persecuting me, in a real tizzy. It may even have been the reason they wanted information about my star-based friends so badly and urgently. The following news items only came my way in June 1995, And in many ways it confirms what I had been told earlier in 1989 aboard the transporter. You may remember I had been told that 1993 would see the return of those from Haven to undertake urgent repairs and adjustments to certain things upon this earth. If my story needs outside confirmation, surely this is it. Reports appearing in Chapter 18 of Coevolution. This news items that from late December 1992 through to mid-1993, British, American, Russian and Icelandic naval forces were involved in a major operation to hunt UFOs. Icelandic UFO saga with missing American warship. The following is a summary of events related at a UFO conference in February 1995 by well-known author, Anthony Dodd. The 20th of December 1992, Mr. Dodd received a telephone call from one of the Icelandic naval sources reporting that three UFOs had been tracked coming down and entering the sea off the east coast of Iceland, near Langeness. The 21st of December 1992, Icelandic fishermen report incidents of large, fast, moving underwater craft with flashing, colored lights. These are accompanied by a glowing airborne object overhead. Heading on a course towards Scotland, the vessels moved through the water, damaging the nets being trawled by fishermen. Accustomed to seeing submarines in the area, fishermen say that these vessels were unlike any submarines they had ever seen. Icelandic authorities ordered escorts by the Icelandic Coast Guard. The 23rd of December 1992, an Icelandic Coast Guard vessel and two gunboats are ordered to take position on the north, east of Iceland at Langeness where previously, 3 days earlier, three UFOs were originally tracked. This operation is done in secrecy, causing crews apprehension. Also arriving was a major force of British and NATO warships, described as a naval exercise. British newspapers report that during the exercise they tracked a very large underwater craft, thought to be one of a new generation of Russian super submarines. The 24th of December 1992, two crews of British nuclear submarines are recalled from their Christmas leave. Both HMS Endurance and HMS Warrior, of the Hunter, Killer, type class, are sent to link up with the surface fleet in Iceland. Icelandic Coast Guard vessels are ordered to take up positions at Alisfjord on the east coast of Iceland. Further information is disclosed from contacts that four more UFOs have been tracked descending and entering the sea in the same quadrant as the first three UFOs sighted on 21 December. Sources confirm that the operation is linked to tracking alien underwater craft. Also disclosed is a massive rescue, search for a missing surface vessel, being conducted in great secrecy. The 30th of December 1992, Icelandic radio broadcasts that many UFO sightings over the mountains near the coast of Iceland are being reported. The 12th of January 1993, terrible weather conditions hold up all Icelandic vessels at Langeness Fjord. Fjord residents are terrified, having reported seeing strange, small figures running around the area at night. The 6th of February 1993. Weather improves and all ships are ordered back to sea. Icelandic vessels resume previous positions on observation duty through to 24 February. The 25th of February 1993. In early morning hours, all vessels are cautioned to stay at least 3 nautical miles away from the American destroyer flotilla operating near the Arctic Circle. While waiting outside the 3-mile zone, ship radar picks up 16 airborne contacts over the American fleet. 16 balls of yellow light are reported seen descending and hovering over the warships. The 15th of April 1993. All vessels in area of the Arctic Circle are looking for, in a secret operation, a missing American ship. Only 2 destroyers are now in that area, both having had their visible markings removed. Crew can be seen wearing full battle dress. Civilian vessels, including gunboats and coast guard vessels, are ordered to stay away from the prohibited zone. The 16th of April 1993. British media report that joint American and Russian exercises are about to take place. The press report that, For the first time since World War II, joint exercises between elite American and Russian troops are about to happen on Russian soil.